Welcome, everyone, to episode 586 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek. The Eagles are about to play in a couple hours, so my mind is elsewhere, but we need to talk about all-star starters. They were announced on Thursday. The reserves are coming out this coming Thursday, so we will discuss any of the notable snubs from the all-star starter conversation. I think one in particular is fairly obvious. We'll also make our picks for who we think should be the seven reserves on each team. Before we get there, a reminder, you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We really appreciate it. Joining me today, as always, is someone who I know is so excited to discuss the latest conspiracy theories around the NBA. Morten Jensen, how's it going?
Man, it's going well for me, but that whole Lakers shenanigan things, like right now where Lakers fans are all up in arms because they got hosed out of a call late in the game, like, what are we doing? Like, the Bulls have at least four games where the last 2 minutes report is basically saying, oh yeah, we completely screwed your team out of a win. But I never saw like the whole NBA Twitter going off on it. But for some reason, because it's the Lakers and Celtics, it's and LeBron is included or involved in it at the end of the game, everyone is up in arms, which is just, it's funny and it's dumb at the same time.
It was definitely a bad missed call, or I guess we'll see.
Oh, for sure.
Last 2 minute report hasn't come out yet, so we don't know officially.
No, but we have eyes. It was a bad call.
Right. Or a bad no call.
Right. Yeah, no call. Better. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I would, you know, they were talking, I forget which game it was. Maybe Nuggets Philly or Knicks and Nets yesterday, but one of the announcers was talking about, like, well, why don't we have, you know, if you win your first challenge, you should get another challenge. Like, it is annoying.
Right.
That coaches have to like strategically plan when to use this challenge because they're like, well, this is an important part of the game, but what if the refs blow another call even later in a more pivotal moment? So, yeah, it'd be cool if the refs.
But you can't even challenge on a no call, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think.
I don't think you can, and I think that's the issue. Part of it. Yeah. I mean, yeah. No. And don't get me wrong, like. That was hopeless. Like, obviously, yeah. You could see LeBron got fouled, but like, why are we like for one obvious miscalled, and it's because it's the Lakers? We've spent like all day on Twitter, and that's been the whole conversation. Like, why? Just because it's the Lakers and it's LeBron? Come on, I'm so like, I like LeBron James. I actually look forward to him breaking Kareem's record. I look forward to him getting that attention. Not that he's lacked in attention, but this is part of why people are just so fatigued about LeBron. It's everything. And if something just minor happens, he gets shoved down your throat for 24 hours. Right. And it's, oh God, it's taxing.
Yeah. I mean, I have not really been online all day, it sounds like I am grateful for that.
Yeah, you dodged a bullet, my friend.
Yeah, I did see the one thing. I think it was David McMenamin, who had a stat about, like, you know, they had four games where they complained about the officiating, and had they won all four of those games, they'd be fourth in the West right now or something like that. So cool. I'm sure they're the only team that's been affected by bad calls. No other team at any point in the game. All the other calls have been correct throughout the league. Don't look at any last 2 minute reports, though.
Right. And of course, the NBA are definitely, this is a great conspiracy theory, because of course the NBA are looking to not have their most marketable team in the playoffs. They're absolutely tanking that to get them Wembanyama. Oh wait, no, because that pick actually goes to New Orleans. But no, still, we have to find another angle on that conspiracy theory. It's a little bit, we need to sharpen the edges around it to make it a little bit more sensational. But God, it's all dumb, Brian. It's all dumb. It's dumb.
As they are negotiating a new national television contract, clearly what they want is to have the worst ratings possible for their marquee playoff games. So they're actually trying to get, I hear they're trying to get the San Antonio Spurs, the Charlotte Hornets, and the Detroit Pistons, sans Kate Cunningham. All three are going to be in the playoffs somehow. Just you wait. Oh, man. Speaking of things that are dumb, let's talk about All-Star starters. They were announced on Thursday.
Yeah.
In the Eastern Conference, we discussed this coming in, so we knew this was going to happen because the way that the NBA ballot is structured, it's broken up by position. So there were four guys in the front court who clearly deserved a spot. One of them was inevitably going to get snubbed. That wound up being Joel Embiid. So Giannis is the captain of the team. KD and Tatum were the three front court players who made it. And then Donovan Mitchell, very deserving. And Kyrie Irving was the other guard in the backcourt. What did you think about the decision to leave Embiid out? He was third in media and player voting, yeah, and fourth in fan voting, which is ultimately what killed him.
No, it's a travesty. It's a travesty. I even if we have to take positions into account, which we shouldn't because they're idiotic, I think he should have gone over Kevin Durant. And I realize there are a lot of people who are, oh, how dare you? I don't care. I think he's better. I think defensively, he's an anchor on one of the best defensive teams in the league. He's scoring over 30 points per game. He's getting to the line at will. He's playing better basketball. I mean, that's how I feel. That's why I would put him over to KD at this point. And that's not to belittle what Durant is doing. Like, every one of these guys should have, in some capacity, have gotten in, which is, again, right, why I'm so annoyed by the positions, because if anything, Kyrie should have been left out, and it should have been Giannis, Embiid, KD, Tatum, and Mitchell in the starting unit for the East. There's no such thing anymore, which is still weird that we vote on it this way, since it's all going to be just like team LeBron and team Giannis? LeBron.
Yeah.
So why is it that we're still voting off of conferences, really?
Yeah. I mean, Doc made that point yesterday. He was like, well, we should just pick the best 24 players, regardless of conference, regardless, right, of position. And
wow, Doc with a good point. Love it.
I know. Doc was sharp yesterday. Did not see that coming. And I mean, you know, watching Joel Embiid cook the two-time reigning MVP for almost 50 points and 20 rebounds on national television yesterday, and thinking like, oh wow, that guy's not even an All-Star starter in the league. This must be the deepest the league has ever been, if that's the case. Which is true, but
speaking of that, has your erection gone down?
No, I'm still riding high. As you saw, I just wrote about PJ Tucker and tagged you in the post because I know you are the biggest PJ Tucker fan out there.
I know. I really, that one rebound he had was tremendous. Yes,
it actually was. Yeah. I mean, I think if you look at advanced analytics, as you're a Denver fan, and that's what you've been caping with for the last couple of years, you'd see Embiid is over Giannis, I think, in most, if not all, of the key all-in-one advanced metrics. So you could make an argument for him over Giannis, even though, you know, Giannis ended up being the captain. I'm with you overall. Like, it's we just need to get rid of positions. And this might sound like just wah, but, you know, they're discussing a new CBA right now. This is the opportunity to make a very easy change. They should do this for both All-Star and All-NBA, because Embiid has finished as the MVP runner-up the last 2 years and hasn't even been first-team All-NBA, which is also just the sign of a stupid system. Oh, yeah, it's ridiculous. System.
Yep.
You know, I think Embiid, Tatum, Giannis, KD, Donovan Mitchell have been the five best players in the Eastern Conference this year, and we should just have a system where you can have the five best players all get elected to be starters. But
yep.
Instead, we get a guy who got suspended from his team earlier this year for sharing an anti-Semitic film in the starting lineup. So great, great work, NBA. Very proud of you for that one. Western Conference, we have Luka and Steph as the starting backcourt, and then Jokic, LeBron, and Zion as the starting frontcourt. Anyone stand out as either a surprise inclusion there or an obvious snub?
Well, I don't think he's a surprise at all. I would have gone with Shea Gilgeous-Alexander over Steph, and then people are going to listen to that and go, well, what about record? Huh? The Golden State Warriors are exactly one game better than OKC. Like, people seem to still believe that OKC are down and have like 11 wins. That's just not the case. They are right there alongside each other. So You can't use the whole winning argument over for Steph unless you deem one win to be that big of a difference maker, which if you do, shut up. That's ridiculous. Right. I think Shea has been better. I think Shea has just been overall better. His defense has been mind-blowing. He is just he gets the basket at will now. He controls the pace of the game. He's been extraordinary. And when you look at the players around them respectively, let's not kid ourselves. Like, how much better is that talent around Steph than it is for Shea, right? I mean, so I think Shea should have been a starter. I'm not really too concerned about it because he's obviously going to be making it as a reserve. And if he's not, then I'll raise a fuss. I'm saying he will. I agree with you. I'm just saying in the off chance that he isn't, I'm going to be loud about it because that's ridiculous. That's probably the one thing. I mean, we can sit here and talk about Zion and AD. Like, I had AD over Zion because I think he was that much better. And then there's that argument about, well, games missed, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. I get that. But how much more was it? Like, Zion hadn't even played, like, substantially more, right?
Zion is at 29 games and 33 minutes played. AD is
27, right?
27 games, 33.2. Yeah.
So two games. I mean, yeah. I think AD has been better. And if we're basing this off of, whoa, Zion has been available for two more games, then again, what are we doing here? What are we talking about? I think it's AD. But also, I will say this. If we're being honest and we're always putting this much emphasis on winning, it's also difficult to justify having two all-star starters from a team that's currently 13th in the West.
Yeah.
Fully recognizing, of course, that a five-game winning streak changes everything because the West is nuts.
Or if the officiating was better.
Right. If the conspiracy wasn't in play. That's right. If Adam Silver wasn't trying to basically hold down the Lakers for somewhat personal gain. That's right. He must have that same blackboard that the gnomes in South Park had, right? Like, steel underpants, ? Step three profits, right? Must be something along those lines. Yes.
Yeah.
For damn sure. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I guess Zion was the one that surprised me the most of the five because of the availability question. And, like, do we know that he's going to be healthy and back for All-Star game?
That's a good question. I don't know if we know that. He was supposed to be reevaluated in 2 weeks, and that was 5 days ago. So nine, it's going to be tight, man. Because you're also hoping him to ramp up. And being reevaluated doesn't mean that you're getting on the court in 2 weeks. That means, we're going to look at things in 2 weeks, and then we're going to reassess. Right. So I don't know. Personally, I wouldn't hate it if the Pelicans were just like, hey, Z, just no. Not going to happen this year, bud.
Just sit it out, wait until after the All. I kind of figured that was what, like, AD, KD, and Zion. As I was, like, initially compiling this list a week or two ago, I had, like, injury replacement in parentheses alongside all three of those guys' names because I just figured, like, all three of those teams would probably, why not buy him a couple extra weeks of rest and like a week and a half off during the All-Star break. But I know AD's already back. I know KD has said he wants to be back in time for All-Star. And I think especially now, if he can prevent Joel Embiid from starting, that might be even more motivation for him to get back healthy. So Zion's my one question mark. So maybe we might have to fill in a front court spot with the reserve at some point, and maybe that opens the door for a 13th All-Star in the West, which I actually think would help clear up a logjam that we'll get into shortly.
Guys can also just decline, right?
I don't think so.
Really?
I don't think so. I could be wrong, but I
Oh, that, that's, if that's the case, if I'm looking at that situation and I know that I'm coming back from injury and I have to like just the crowd wants me to do 360s and like high alley-oops and whatever, I'm going to my team doc and I'm going to go, hey, look, just give me a very thorough physical. And if I say ow somewhere, you make a big deal out of it. Okay.
Like I want to say, I think Jimmy Butler a couple years ago, like didn't really want to play or was like nursing some sort of injury and like not bad enough to hold him out of the game. But he basically told his coach, like, play me 2 minutes and then sit me for the rest of the game.
Right. Right.
I can't remember if that was him or which year it was, but like now that you mention it, that is ringing a bell. Mm-hmm. But no, I believe if you are healthy and you're selected, you know, if you're like legitimately injured, if Zion does not return to play before the All-Star break, I don't think he'll be expected to play during the All-Star game. But like Anthony Davis, now that he's returned, if and when he is selected, I think he is expected to play.
Then I hope that's the same procedure. Just him coming in, tipping off, like, you know, jumping off with at the tip off and just basically saying, okay, foul me. Someone foul someone and just get me the hell out.
Right.
Then obligation filled. I mean,
yeah. Yeah. So I'm actually with you in terms of, I mean, again, this is where positions being on the ballot is stupid, because I think there is a very clear case really for like any of the four Western Conference guards, Luka, Steph, yeah, John Morant, or SGA to start. I probably would have had all of them over Zion.
And then Nikola, you add as the lone pick.
Well, no, I would have had LeBron in there, so I would have had three of those four guards.
What? Then, you'd have Jokic on the bench?
No, Jokic would play too. I'm saying three guards, Jokic and LeBron.
Oh, I thought you said four: Steph, Luka, no. Well, John, Shea.
Yeah, they all have cases, but I would have at one of them.
I would have gone all four, and then Jokic.
Honestly, after watching 37-year-old PJ Tucker shut down Jokic yesterday, maybe it should be the four guards of LeBron.
Oh God, you are gonna milk this for weeks.
Oh yeah. Nuggets fans have talked a lot of trash over the years. It's time for your comeuppance.
Right, because Philly fans are absolutely.
Yep. Can't finish
that. Right. Yeah.
We've had nothing to talk trash about. So what are we talking trash about? We're talking trash about advanced analytics. That is where we have focused our eye. Oh, God.
Yeah. I have, you're a Phillies or an Eagles fan. Sorry. I have seen I've seen you after they won the Super Bowl absolutely shit faced. And yeah. I mean, you're one of the good Philly fans. Like, you're one of the polite Philly fans. I don't even dare wonder like who are on the tougher end of that thing.
Hopefully we'll find out in roughly 5 hours. Fingers crossed. All right, so let's go make our reserve picks. I thought the East was a lot harder to do than the West, so we could start there. Who are the guys who you think, like, I try to separate it by, you know, like pretty solid locks and then like the last couple spots that I was unsure of. And I don't know if you took positions into account. I frankly don't care, but as a reminder for the listeners out there, because positions are still on the ballot, it's two backcourt reserves, three frontcourt reserves, and then two wild cards, which means either guards or frontcourt players. So I tried to do that, and I think I did, but that is how it's going to be.
Yeah, and so for the Danes listening in, a couple weeks ago, I did like a 2-hour All-Star special on the radio with two of my mates. And in the time past since, I might have switched up a few things here and there. Because, the field of players is just insane. I mean, you and I have been talking about this. Like, the NBA has never been better. So it's just impossible. And you were asking me about the East, right?
Yes. So, yeah. Who are the guys you're like confident should be in as a reserve?
All right. Let me start with the two guards, Tyrese Halliburton and Jaylen Brown.
Yep. Me too.
Because there's just no way they shouldn't be in there. Just no way. I mean,
I would have had either one over Kyrie Irving, frankly.
Yep. Yeah.
If you get suspended from your own team, that should just automatically disqualify you from starting for the All-Star game, especially over such a stupid reason. And kudos to the Nets for weathering the storm as well as they did. But man, that had the potential to just sink their season 2 weeks in.
Right. And then, of course, on the three front courts, off the bench, you got to start with Joel Embiid because
sure,
that's where we are. Then I have Pascal Siakam, and Jimmy Butler.
Okay. I had everyone except for Jimmy as a lock that you had. And Jimmy is just because of availability. He's in consideration for one of those final few spots. So I'm not saying he didn't make my team, but I thought, the other guys had a more clear cut, compelling case. Before we go into the, those last couple guys, talk to me about Siakam. Cause I thought, he's on a team that is currently 12th in the East, 23-28. Safe to say they are not living up to expectations this year. And, whether it should factor in or not, team record often does factor into All-Star selections. It's rare to have, two guys, as you mentioned, which we'll get to with the Lakers, two guys from a 12 seed or a 13 seed. And usually you just have to be putting up such outrageous numbers to be in consideration if you're on one of those teams. So why do you have Siakam in there?
Because that Raptors team is a travesty for whatever reason. And that's not his fault. Yeah. I mean, he's at 25 points per game, 8+ rebounds, 6.5 assists. Granted, he's not very efficient. In fact, I just wrote a piece on Forbes about the Raptors, specifically detailing just how horrid they are efficiency-wise, especially from mid-range. For some reason, Brian, they decided, we're going to be, at least at the time I wrote this, they were the second most active team in taking shots from beyond 16 feet. But they were, I believe, 28th in efficiency from that area. So it was just
just between 16 feet and the 3-point line, you mean?
Correct. Yeah. Sorry. Oh, yeah. Okay. The long two. Yeah, gotcha. So they just take a lot of dumb shots and none of them are really all that efficient, which just means that you have a lot of capable players. But since you don't have that one guy who can really come in and just, be that pillar of efficiency, none of the other guys kind of can move around that player. And Siakam, though, I think just based on volume and ability to do multiple things while also playing a lot of tough defense, I just think he's the best player there. It's just a weird roster as well. They're not getting a lot of support from the bench. If I asked you, and don't even go to their basketball reference page, if I ask you who are the Raptors' backup point guard, what would you say?
I would ask whether they have one based on the reaction from Raptors Twitter, because I know I haven't looked lately, so this might have changed, but I know they had three of the four or three of the five minutes per game leaders in the NBA. So Nick Nurse just does not the best at all. But to answer your question, I would guess Malachi Flynn.
Who's played 34 out of 51 games and under 15 minutes per game and has shot 36.5% from the field on the year. Basically, they have very awful depth. And that means you're just going to have to stretch those guys so much. So I think, and that's why I'm willing to overlook all the losses here. I think Siakam is just that good of a guy. And if he played on a team that had either better depth or better efficiency players around him, I think we would see an optimized role of him, or an optimized version of him, rather. This isn't the Siakam who played off of Kawhi Leonard back in the day. This is a guy who's gotten dramatically better, but really doesn't have a Kawhi-like type of player or even remotely close alongside him, regardless of how much we're all apparently willing to trade for OG Anunoby. There isn't that guy there. So I'm basically saying I understand that Siakam doesn't have great efficiency. I don't care. He's that good.
Yeah, I mean, great efficiency is all relative. He's still shooting above 47% overall. You know, the three-point shot has not been great. He's at 31.6 this year. Yep. But he's never been a great three-point shooter. I mean, his career is 32.7. So it's not, it's no, not it's that far off. But yeah, I mean, a career high 25 points, career high 6.4 assists. And to your point, I mean, it, none of this is his fault. He's been playing very well. So yeah, I mean, I think he should be in. I imagine he's going to be in, but I do hope that voters overlook the Raptors record while considering him. So why did you have Jimmy in as a lock rather than, you know, one of the last few, like, maybe, maybe nots?
Because it's Jimmy Butler. He's that good. I mean, we're talking about a guy who doesn't really, you know, in terms of the raw stats, he'll never wow you. I mean, let me just look it up. What's he at? Like, I think 21.8, right? 6.1 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals. Like, that is thoroughly solid. But you kind of look at that and go, well, we have multiple guys averaging 30-plus points. Why should he get any consideration? Because the guy is just smart as a whip when it comes to playing basketball. It's just, he's a savant. We don't really talk about that a whole lot. We're so busy, like, talking about Luka and all those guys, like Jokic, who makes all these crazy passes. Jimmy is a guy who, like those two, understand the game at such a high level, it's almost incomprehensible. He's an elite defender. He almost never turns the ball over. You can play him as your primary playmaker. You can play him as your secondary playmaker. He takes incredibly smart shots. He gets to the line at will, converts there. He doesn't force things up that are bad possession. And if he does, it's so rare that you don't really register it and you're cool with it. I don't care about the raw numbers here. I care about the impact. I care about just how bloody good he is as a player. And I recognize that he's played only 35 games this year. But, I mean, look, if we're starting Zion Williamson, who have played 29, why can't we sit here and justify Jimmy as an all-star player at 35 games played? I think we would do basketball wrong if he wasn't an all-star.
That's fair. I mean, he does. You're right that he does not come up like nationally, in especially when we're discussing like best two way forwards in the league. But based on the playoffs over the last couple of years, he absolutely should be in that discussion. I wonder if part of it is he's like basically load managing his way through the entire regular season because he just knows what he's capable of in the playoffs at this point. So the Jimmy we're getting now is like 70-80% of what we'll get in the playoffs. And I agree with you. I mean, playoff Jimmy, clearly not only an all-star, like an all-NBA caliber player.
Correct.
The availability is what kept him out of lock territory for me. But
that's fair.
But, I mean, I think he is certainly in the conversation. And, you know, I will reveal my last couple picks and we'll see if he's in there or not. But yeah, I mean, it's Miami is just interesting in general because you can also make a pretty convincing case for Bam Adebayo. But then we again run into the question of like, you know, do they deserve two starter or two all-stars as the sixth seed in the East? And if not, which one of them misses out?
Right.
So let's get into those last few picks. Who you have two spots open, both wild card spots. So you've got to recap, you have Jaylen Brown, Tyrese Halliburton, Joel Embiid, Pascal Siakam, Jimmy Butler as your first five picks, two picks left. Who are you going with?
So it's going to be dealer's choice in a way. I'm actually going to play a little game with you here because I can't decide between Tyrese Maxey or James Harden.
Really? Oh, no. It's James Harden.
I don't think I can choose there.
Yeah, it's James Harden.
Why?
Maxey's been really good, but James Harden is like the engine of that offense. The Sixers would not be nearly as good as they are without James Harden orchestrating in half court.
And yet, like see, I understand where you're coming from with that, but at the same time, I would also argue that James is a guy who is a lot better in half court situations. And there are so many times when the Sixers have needed like just an energy injection and mm-hmm. Tyrese Maxey has come out like gangbusters and just constantly forced the issue, which has kind of kicked their asses, everyone else, and basically said, come on, join me, run.
Yeah.
Let's get that effort level up. And I understand what you're saying. Like, talent-wise, I agree with you. It's James Harden, for damn sure. But I feel as though Maxey has gotten underrated this year because what he provides is something that outside of arguably the Anthony Melton, I don't think anyone else on that roster does. He is such a firecracker. And if you didn't have him, I wonder how good your offense would have been just because he generates a ton of points in transition. Even after makes, he pushes the ball so aggressively. I don't know, man. I think that matters a lot. I wonder where your offense would have been without him because it would have been so overly reliant upon half-court execution. So, I don't know. Like, are we just going like the half-court maestro in James? Or are we also, or are we sitting here going, well, Tyrese Maxey is offering an element that virtually no one else on the roster does, and thus he should be in consideration?
I don't know what the case is. I mean, if you want to have both of them in, that's one thing, but
yeah, no.
I think it's hard to make a case of Maxey over Harden given, I mean, give it, let me see what Harden's usage is. Yeah, I mean, Maxey's technically higher, but I think that's probably boosted because he's off the bench now. I mean, the Harden Embiid pick and roll is just the foundation of what has the Sixers going the way they are. And you were talking about their offense without Maxey. I was trying to see if I could find it on Cleaning the Glass. I don't know if I can separate it. This is just going to be their offense the whole the whole way instead of just
So it's gonna be noisy. Yes.
Yeah, because I was trying to he missed a month with the foot injury or month and a half or whatever. Overall, they're still averaging 115.4 points per 100 possessions without him on the floor. And the new starting lineup, or quote unquote, one of the three, but the only one we've seen since Doc made that announcement of Harden, Melton, Tobias Harris, PJ Tucker, Joel Embiid is averaging 126.2 per 100. So I think they're fine without him offensively, at least in the starting lineup. I think he's been really awesome off the bench. I've been so encouraged by that. And, you know, as of Wednesday, I believe he was a plus 2,700 on FanDuel for sixth man of the year. He is now down to plus 850. So third overall, only behind Russell Westbrook and Malcolm Brogdon. Something to keep in mind there. But
no, seven games off the bench so far. But yeah, I understand. Like if he keeps that up and he has some more games off the bench than he does starting, I still think it's wrong to bench him. I understand the tendency of doing that because he's a combo and he come in, he can run the second unit, yada, yada, yada. I get that. And kudos to Tyrese for accepting that.
Yeah.
I still hate it. I still hate that you're putting him in that position. He's too good to be not starting. That's just me, though. But it sounds to me like you're going Harden, and I said dealer's choice. So let's plug Harden in there.
Yeah. Harden was one of my I have three open spots because I did not have Jimmy as a lock. So Harden was one of my three final ones. Yeah.
Yeah. So it came down to me here, and it's Trae Young and I don't know. It's Trae Young. It could be DeMar DeRozan. I'm still flip-flopping on that. I really am. I think I went Trae Young on the Danish program. But at the same time, there's also a Darius Garland out there.
Yeah.
With 22 and 8 line.
Yep.
Hitting 40%.
Brunson's out there. Julius Randle has been playing well lately.
Yeah, I'm not putting two Knicks in there.
Yeah, no, obviously. But I mean,
yeah.
This is what I'm saying. Like, I had a much easier time doing the West because you get to these final few spots and it's like, well, I could make a case for any of these guys. I could I could very easily make a case for Trey Young or Darius Garland or Jalen Brunson or Julius Randle, DeMar DeRozan, Bam Adebayo, who else? Drew Holiday, even Kristaps Porzingis. Awesome. Yeah. Like, they've all been great. So, yeah, this is where it gets really tough.
Screw it. You know what I'm going to do? Because now I remember what I kind of did at the Danish Danish program. I went Deontay.
Really?
And I'm wow. I'm admitting right now that part of that is like just stick it to the very a very unwilling teammate in Trae Young who has okay. just who has wasted 2 to 3 years of John Collins.
Ah, yes. So, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So I yeah. And look, it's not like Deontay isn't playing well. 21 points, 5.5 rebounds, 6+ assists, a steal and a half per game. He's very surprisingly been a better 3-point shooter this year than Trae Young, which where the hell did that come from?
would not have had that on my bingo card. And the defense.
Could we also agree that the defense is just levels ahead
of Trae Young?
Yeah.
I mean, find me someone who is not levels ahead of Trae Young defense.
My point is this. People will point out, well, Trae is averaging 27, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
10. Okay. Is the defensive gap between them, or sorry, is the offensive gap between them bigger than the defensive gap? Because I wouldn't say it was. I would say Deontay. Huh?
Yeah, I was about to say that sounds like the Embiid Jokic MVP debate from the last couple of years.
Oh, God, let's not even go into that.
I know, yeah. But it's the same argument.
Yeah. God, I don't know. I'm just going to go Murray because I'm petty, and I think Trey, I just want to stick it to Trey a little bit. But honestly, I don't care. That final piece or final spot could go to DeMar for all I care. It's fine.
I'm surprised you didn't have DeMar. I just figured, like, if someone who's spent the season for God knows why, still watching the Bulls every night, if you're not even willing to put him in, that's not a good sign.
Well, I mean, this has been a very bad season. And look, he's been brilliant. I could put him in there just as a way of raising his trade value a little bit further. That's
right,
cool.
Right.
If that's the thing. Yeah, yeah, the strategic mind of it all. Okay, cool. Let's put DeMar in there over Deontay. If any GM out there is affected by my opinion of DeMar DeRozan being selected as a wild card for the All-Star game, go for it. I don't know. I think the Bulls just has such a stink about them. It's just been such a horrid year that I find it hard and difficult to award them anything. But if there was a guy, I will say this. If there was a guy on that roster that definitely deserved some recognition, it's DeMar DeRozan. So, I could go that route. For now, I just want to be petty and give it to Deontay over Trey, because why not?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, DeMar was on my list of guys I considered. It's interesting because, you know, we were just talking about Siakam overcoming a horrific overall team season to still be in consideration. So it's interesting why it's different for DeMar. I think, at least in my mind, it's because Siakam individually is exceeding or, you know, playing better than ever. I don't know that that's the case for DeMar. DeMar's been playing very well, but he hasn't reached like a new peak this season, or correct me if I'm wrong, that he has.
No. But there's a difference here because I think roster context matters. Like, for example, with the Raptors, when I asked you, like, who is their backup point guard, the Bulls have like a million backup point guards. They have backups. Like, they have a team that theoretically should be better than what they are right now. I mean, Andre Drummond is their backup center. Derek Jones Jr. has done very, very well backing up the four. You know, it's just, this whole team doesn't jive. But I will say this, if you put Siakam in on this team, if you replace DeMar with Pascal Siakam, I think you could see how Siakam would like ease his way into a more efficient season simply because you don't have all those weird non-existent components, like not having a proper backup point guard, like not having a proper depth, generally speaking. I mean, so I think it's more about that. The Bulls, by all intents and purposes, have the necessary tools to get something going. They just fail at doing so time and time again. So that's why I'm thinking like Siakam is just in a rougher spot, all things considered. Yeah. Like they have a greater starting lineup, I think, in Toronto, but they're just so overtaxed and overburdened. And it doesn't really help the fact that Van Vliet is hitting like 39% from, we have to have a conversation about that at some point. Like I love Fred, but that dude has never been efficient. And I think that's starting to become a super big problem.
Well, I'm sure we'll have a conversation about it leading up to the trade deadline. Cause that's,
yeah, I'm afraid so.
He's going to be a big piece. And I mean, I don't know. I think it's been reported already. I don't think this was new news about him. Supposedly, you know, there's some question about like whether they offered him this 4-year, $112 million extension or if he turned it down or not. He says it was never actually officially on the table, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, we'll save that for, I'm sure we'll talk trade deadline after this episode, basically from now until the actual deadline. But yeah, I mean, Fred VanVleet, certainly not in consideration for one of my all-star spots this year. I'll say that.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. And I, by the way, I will concede this. I understand a couple of weeks ago when we did the whole thing in on the Danish radio program, Julius Randle was a hot topic. We debated that for like 10 minutes and I was like adamant. No. He has played better over the past couple of weeks. He is putting up just crazy raw numbers. And he's having wild games. And I concede that we are talking about a player who did his very, very best at reaching that upper echelon to where he could be in consideration. I just don't have him in there, but he is so bloody close. So I will say that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I mean, if the roster expanded to 15, I would probably have him in.
Yes, I agree with that. I think that is a fair way to put it. If it expanded to 15, I would probably have DeMara and Randle in there. Yeah.
Yeah, because he has been really, I mean, he's almost back to like his 2020-21 level of just off the dribble, outrageous shot making, which fueled his very deserved.
Well, that is actually a correction that he has made because, Brian, he has gotten so much better with his shot selection. He is only taking 6.2% of his offense now is the long two. Mm-hmm. 2 years ago when he had that outlier season, a sixth of his shot, 16.7%, were from that area. He's taking far more threes, and he is taking more shots inside than 2 years ago. So he has actually kind of embraced Morey ball, which to me has... Like that, he still has some efficiency issues to sort, but that's a pretty damn good sign to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, certainly encouraged how he's been playing over the past few weeks, past month. And yeah, he's in contention. He did not make my final ballot. So I had Harden as one of my three. I did have Jimmy Butler in there, despite the availability issues, because as you said, when he's active, I mean, he's had some games where he just completely takes over. Miami would have been dead in the water without him. But his two-way impact is just so enormous that you have to respect what he brings to the table. And then I actually went with Bam Adebayo as my final one.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not there, but I hear you.
Okay. Well, I would just say for all of the frustration that we have aired in the years about Bam Adebayo not being more aggressive offensively, I think we're starting to see that version of him come out a little bit more.
Yeah.
I mean, he is starting to, like, taking a career low, only 32.1% of his shots from within 3 feet of the basket. That's gone down, you know, it was like above 50% or close to 50% each of his first three seasons.
Yeah,
we're starting to see a little bit more, still not really taking long twos at all, which is fine, because he's not hitting those shots either, but knocking down a career high 46.7% of his 10 to 16 footers, and he's taking more than a quarter of his shots from that range. So, you know, this is the adjustment he needed to make. We saw how teams defended him in the playoffs. They knew he wasn't really a risk to pull up from the mid-range, so they sagged off of him, and he couldn't punish them for it. Now we're starting to see, oh, he's added that to his bag. Still not a good three-point shooter, a high-volume three-point shooter by any means. He's taken 10 this year, hit one of them. So that's something that I'd like to, you know, see him continue working on. But I think you know, combine his newfound offensive aggressiveness and the new skills he's showing. Plus, yeah. I mean, he's defensively one of the best switchable, versatile big men in the league. You know, it's hard for me to put Trae Young, who's on, you know, the eighth seed and who may or may not be not a favorite locker in his own locker room. Yeah. Yep. And also, I mean, you know, like defense matters, or I think it should factor into these conversations, because that's a lot of the value that Bam Adebayo brings is on defense. And I think when there's a two-way guy who makes that much of an impact on both ends of the floor, you know, I would tend to prefer him over a one-way guy, even if they're as good on that end of the floor as Trae Young. So that is why I went with Bam. But again, this was really, really tough. There were so many guys who I think can and should be all-stars. So, you know, shout out to all the content creators out there on Thursday night who need to do all the, like, no surprises and snubs from the all-star team. You will have a lot to work with, I think.
I think with Bam, the reason I didn't have him in there, and this might be faulty on my part, because I'm like, now I'm really thinking about it, and I'm realizing I might have been too tough. I was thinking, you know, Jimmy missed 15 games. Tyler Hero was out 12 games. Kyle Lowry is just washed, at least offensively. Dust. He's just not that guy. And they have no other real shot creator on that team. So I felt as though when I watched their games, it was almost out of just sheer necessity that he started taking more shots. But I started remembering in past years, if they were down bad for a couple of weeks, he still wouldn't step up. He did this time. So that is progression. That is development. That is him taking that step, which he hadn't shown before. So I concede. I'm actually a little bit harsh on Bam, and unnecessarily so. I buy your premise.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think he like has a landslide definitely in case, which is why he's in this section and not as the lock. But, you know, if I had to pick between him and Jimmy this year alone, I think the availability might push me to Bam over Jimmy, which, I mean, I'm not saying that Bam is a better basketball player than Jimmy. I would much rather have Jimmy in the playoffs. Jimmy is still the focal point of that team, but, you know, Bam has played 10 more games than Jimmy Butler. Yeah. And I think that does.
That matters. You know,
yeah. I think it should.
Okay. No, I think that's entirely fair logic on your part.
So let's go to the West now, Mort. Who would you have as a lock in the West?
So Ja Morant and SGA as the two guards off the bench, because let's just not kid ourselves. Anthony Davis, Domantas Sabonis, Lauri Markkanen. And then I have two wild cards.
Yes. And I have the same exact 10 as locks. Again, AD may or may not need an injury replacement. So we can name a 13th if you want to, as a potential replacement for him. But, I mean, one of the potential replacements is also hurt and might need a replacement as well. So maybe put in Booker for the AD replacement just to get him an all-star nod, and then Booker also, he doesn't play, but yeah.
Go ahead. Right. Well, see, that was the thing, because Booker and Dame are in my wild cards. Right. So,
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have other wild cards like waiting in the wings though.
Oh, I mean, so why Booker? Cause I mean, yeah, I have no
why Booker.
Well, I know, but I mean, availability again is the question with him. He's been hurt for, I mean, how many games has he played this year now?
29. The same. Yeah. Wasn't that the same with Zion?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But 29 out of 51. It's almost half the season he's missed.
Yeah, but he's 27 points per game, 5.5 assists, 4.5 rebounds. He's absolutely the clear-cut best player on the Suns. One of the most ferocious scorers in the league. I mean, I don't know where else to go here. I could get creative and go De'Aaron Fox, maybe.
That's what I did. I went Fox and
James. I had him up before. I had him up before, and I could see an argument be made there. Simply because he's played 45 games. This team is winning. I even think I picked him on the Danish program. But you see, again, that's the thing. You know, you're looking at those numbers and you're looking at those names. Yeah, you know what? Fox over Booker because of the availability. And then I have Booker as the first in line to replace anyone who gets injured.
Right. AD but, or...
Right, yeah. right. But the thing is, though, this is where... we really need to talk about all-star rosters getting expanded. Yeah. Because, I mean, I fully understand if Suns fans after listening to this are, what? You chose to not have Devin Booker in there? Like, how can you justify that? And it's a good question. I mean, yeah, you can say the 29 games played, but, I mean, my God, the man is obviously always, like, an all-NBA candidate. Mm-hmm. So how could you not consider him? But, yo, Fox has been great. We're talking about 24 points per game, 4.5 rebounds, 6 assists, you know, just finishing at the basket at an unreal rate as a perimeter player, hitting over 50% of the field, getting to the line, just tremendous, tremendous. And the clutch numbers, we've been talking about that before. Mm-hmm. I think he has a lot of help around him, but I don't think necessarily that should hurt him because the help that he does have around him seems to suit him. And he also adjusts to them. So I don't think that is something that should be used against him, really. But see, this is so difficult. And I could have sat down and just gone over this for like 7 days, but I decided not to because you're ultimately just going to overthink it. But Fox is good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can't go wrong with him. You can't go wrong with Book. You can't really go wrong with anyone.
Yeah. I mean... I did not have Booker in mind because of the availability. I agree with you. He, on a per game basis or had the season, you know, had they picked All Stars a month ago, he would have been in for me. But, you know, 22 out of 51 games missed is we're getting to the point where
it's too much.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, again, I definitely would not have had Zion as a starter.
Yeah.
Probably would have had him as a reserve. Just because this Pelicans team blows without both him and Ingram. And we saw, I mean, with those guys healthy, or even just with Zion healthy, no Ingram, they were really, really good. But as soon as Zion went down, the wheels have come off. So I would have had him in, but I mean, Book is a tough omission. And I'm 100, like, if I knew he was not going to play, I would 100% put him in. Just to get someone else in there as well, so we can get as many All-Stars as possible this year.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, otherwise, you know, Dame, I could see some pushback on, oh, he's the 12th seed in the West. Well, he's averaging like 30 points a game. Like, he's just outrageously good this year. You know, this is the Dame of old. I mean, it's like he had that surgery, and actually, this is a career high for him in points. He's just edging out his 2019-2020 season, same efficiency.
Oh no, he's not just etching it out. He is doing it in over a minute and a half less per game.
Yeah, it's a good point.
His per 36 numbers are definitely the best ever.
Yeah. Man, good for him.
Yeah. Awesome.
We'll have another talk. You know, you mentioned Fred VanVleet. We need to have a talk about Jeremy Grant at some point, who I think also could be in consideration for All-Star. I don't think you can give the Blazers 2 All-Stars given their
record. And, no, you cannot.
And I think Dame is pretty safely the All-Star you're picking from that team. You know, the Kings, like, they're third in the West right now. They aren't going away. I mean, we've talked about it. You know, the difference between third and 13th right now is only 5 games. So third sounds a lot better than it is. But I think, you know, Fox and Sabonis, like, are both the key. Like, without Sabonis, they're not nearly as good as they are. So I think he's clearly should be a lock, I hope. Because if we didn't have Nikola Jokic, we'd be talking about, like, how paradigm-breaking Domantas Sabonis is. I mean, he's averaging, 18.5, 12.3 rebounds, 7.3 assists. To get that from a center is ridiculous. I want to shout out, which program was it that they were on? They were on some ESPN show recently where they were, like, running through, you know, some of their offensive sets worked and, like, just all of the different options they had if, you know, Fox has the ball and they are running pick and roll with him and Sabonis. And it was just they do this kind of thing on the ESPN NFL shows all the time. And then, like, every time it happens, all of Twitter is like, why don't they do this for the NBA? So shout out to whichever show that was. It may be NBA Today, or I don't remember. But
I haven't seen it, but I want to now because I'd love to hear that. Yeah.
Yeah, it was really, really interesting. And it made you appreciate just, like, how much these guys are working in tandem to fuel what is happening in Sacramento this year. So, you know, I think I would be pretty bummed if I'm a Kings fan to not have both of them get in. I think and I hope both of them do. And Fox, I believe, would be a first time all-star for him as well. I think that's what I'm saying. Like, it was relatively, without, other than the Booker thing because of his availability, it was relatively clear cut for me in the West. I thought, you know, the five guys who are starting, and if SGA or if Ja had been voted in over Steph, Steph would have been reserved. So no issue there for me. And then, you know, whichever two of the four, Ja and SGA, the ones who actually did that, get voted in as the starter. So they would be off the bench. I think Sabonis, clearly Markkanen, clearly AD, clearly. And then, you know, Dame goes without saying. And Fox, you know, he was probably the last one in for me, but I think he's still got a pretty big gap over anyone else. I do want to ask you about the Clippers guys, though, because we are, you know, had the vote taken place like 3 weeks from now, I think Kawhi Leonard is in. But he's only played 27 games in total. He's started 25. He's, like, looking like himself again all of a sudden. But Paul George is the other one. 36 games played, 23.5 points, six rebounds, 5.3 assists, shooting 46 overall, almost 39 from three. He has a case. It's just, I don't know that I have him over.
That's Fox the or, issue.
Yeah. Markkanen or anyone.
I will say as much. He's missed 16 games. If he had played all 52 and the Clippers had, like, maintained the top four position and he'd put up these numbers, that case would have been a hell of a lot stronger, and that would have warranted some serious attention, especially considering, like, Book, for example, having played just 29. But I just think there's so many superior options right now, which is ridiculous because remember just like 4 years ago how high everyone was on Paul George? And, like, he hasn't really lost a step either. He's still Paul George. It's just you have so much talent now that's just kind of surpassed him, which is wild, by the way. It's just crazy the amount of talent that there is right now. Like, he's still the same Paul George as before, but it's just not up to snub. I mean, you're looking like he would have to basically go in and have an OKC year, like the year he had 28 points per game, 8+ rebounds, like led the league in steals. Like, that's kind of the year he would need to have for everyone to go, oh yeah, like, no nonsense all-star pick. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think you said it well. If he were healthy the whole time, I think he would be in. But, you know, the talent discrepancy now isn't great enough between him and everyone else that, you know, you can't factor in if you don't care about availability and if you don't care about games played, then yeah, he's an all-star. He should be an all-star over. He is a better basketball player, with all due respect to Lauri Markkanen or even Sabonis. You know, I think he is a better two-way player than either one of those guys. But I think that Sabonis and Markkanen have had better seasons than him. So yeah. If we're not treating this as like a lifetime achievement award, which we should not be, it's
correct.
Should be reflective of who is having the best 22-23 season. I would have Markkanen and Sabonis above Paul George and above Kawhi Leonard for right now. But especially with Kawhi, that's probably going to change in the next few weeks.
Can I tell you a very messed up stat that no one is talking about? Because everyone is so busy talking about like, oh, Kawhi, is he reliable? Does he play enough for the Clippers due to all of his injuries and all that, right? Mm-hmm. During their respective Clippers tenure, which started at the same time, obviously, Paul mm-hmm. George has only played 33 games more than Kawhi Leonard mm-hmm. as a Clipper. So that whole availability talk, which always centers around Kawhi, mm-hmm. We may have to reevaluate who that debate really should be about.
Well, I mean, if it's 33 more, it should still be about Kawhi, but should maybe be
with
about
one
both
full
of them.
Missed season, though, right?
Yeah,
Ah, I just think it's curious. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, certainly availability has been a question for Paul George as well. And I think that's what holds him out here. A few of the other guys at least had in consideration. Aaron Gordon, you can make a case for him. You could argue he's been the Nuggets' second best player this season.
Sure, but no.
Yeah, I couldn't quite get there with him. CJ McCollum was the one I really wanted to. I want to find a way to get him in because he would also be a first time. You know, he is now taking Mike Conley's place as like the best player not to make an all-star game, best active player. Mm. But the way, you know, not his fault, because how many teams could withstand their best two players getting hurt, but the Pelicans being in tailspin mode ever since Zion and Ingram went down does not exactly help CJ's case. So correct. I had him on the outside looking in. Anthony Edwards, I think, has really come on as of late, and he's close, but I think the start of the season was pretty rocky for him. And again, I just don't know, you know, sure, you could say all of those guys, CJ's having all-star caliber season, Anthony Edwards is having all-star caliber season, Paul George is having all-star caliber season. I don't disagree with any of that, but it's the one in, one out rule. Like, which one of, you know, Fox, Dame, Sabonis, Markkanen, and AD, are you replacing for any of those guys? And that's what I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Honestly, we've gone over an hour now, and it's just hitting me with the realization we're talking about like the minutia of, oh, this guy could be in and all that, and all for that guy comes in for 5 minutes and takes three triples and sits down again. A game that I may not even watch.
I will watch it. I will be excited. I will be very excited when Joel Embiid comes off the bench. Has there ever been a bench guy to win MVP? The All-Star game?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there has been.
Yeah, I'm sure there is. Yeah, but Embiid's going to do it this year. I'm very excited. He's just going to dunk on everyone. Again, this is, you know, we say this like every time we talk awards or talk all NBA, all-star. This league is so loaded with talent. It is outrageous. We didn't even bring up Jaren Jackson Jr., another, right. You know, another guy where availability is the only reason.
Well, he's only an all-star if he plays on the home court.
right. According to Reddit. Yeah. I loved how many people, like, I, you know, Kevin O'Connor, legitimately, like, kudos to him for doing this, went through and watched all 66 blocks that JJJ had at home after this stupid Reddit thread comes up. And I was like, I think he said there are only three or four that were even questionable. So I, you know, I like replied to him. I was like, but Kevin, someone on Reddit told me this is true, so it had to be. And I can't tell you how many people were like, well, yeah, I mean, you have to do the research. It was, I did not wade into early politics COVID Twitter, or early COVID politics Twitter, I should say. Yeah, thank God, because I probably would have committed a homicide. So I think this was my brief brush with that. But oh my God,
I was like, I'll actually tell you, I'll admit right off the bat, something changed. Like, I had to get more intel before I was like fully convinced that this was a non-story for one reason. So for years, it had been scorekeepers that had actually given the NBA their stats. Uh-huh. I was not aware that local scorekeepers nowadays were only being limited to fouls. That's the mm-hmm. only thing they register. That's fouls. The NBA has set up basically their own statistical division, or not division, I don't even know what to call it, but basically the league in real time is looking at individual stats. Yeah. I was not aware of that before Fred Katz pointed that out, because he had apparently been in touch with the league about this, because he saw that story too. It was like, that's interesting. And like initially when I saw that, I was like, good Lord, those splits are pretty insane. I mean, look, let's be honest here. It's 100% increase if you gather both steals and blocks. It's over 100% increase from home and away. And I think we can all agree that, yeah, a guy plays better at home than he does away, but 100% increase is statistically unlikely. Is that the fair way to phrase it?
It's statistically significant.
It's just right. There we go. And so I think it was totally fair to like, what, like just basically ask the question, like, what is this about? Which is, and then Fred Katz came out and like, no. Like, this is on the up and up. The league is actually doing the stats real time. I was like, okay, cool. Then this is a non-story, but I understand when you look at it from on the surface that it's 100% increase. You go, huh? I would like to know more about this. Like, that's a fucking catchy thing.
Yeah, certainly a catchy thing. Also, you know, horse medicine cures COVID. I would like to know more about that too. That also sounds catchy. Show me the proof. Like, the Reddit thread had like, what, I think 5 or 7 examples.
Right.
If you're coming out with an allegation like this, you better have a rock solid case, and you better show all of the evidence up front, which, you know, the Reddit thread did not. So then when people like KOC, or I know Kirk Goldsberry of ESPN,
he also did too.
Watched through, and was like, no,
a lot of people did, actually.
Right.
A lot of people
did. Right. And then, like, you know, the do your own research folks were like, well, you haven't done it. I'm like, yeah, because I got a effing 2-year-old that I'm watching all weekend. Like, no, I'm not going to sit here and watch 3 hours of Jaren Jackson Jr. clips to debunk.
But I was like, so here's the thing from my end. I wasn't like saying that, because I went to like the Danish account that I had was like, okay, this is pretty significant. The NBA should definitely look into this. And that's when I said that, I did not know the NBA actually did the real-time stats. As soon as I understood that, I was like, oh, okay, then I don't even need for anything to happen. I don't even need for, because if they have done that, they absolutely know their stuff. I was actually afraid it was the scorekeepers that still were responsible for sending in data to the league. Because, like, remember back in the day with the whole Nick Van Exel thing? I understand it's like 25 years ago, but there were a time when games were being significantly manipulated by a team's own scorekeepers. And I thought that the NBA had just like put down harsher rules for scorekeepers, basically saying, no, you can't do the Nick Van Exel shit. Don't even think about it. But when you saw like the 100%, you're like, uh-oh, what? are we looking at another set of shenanigans? And lo and behold, we weren't. So it's fine. It was like a one-time blip where everyone kind of went a little bit crazy. And then as soon as the research was done, people were like, oh, okay, it's cool.
Right. Fine. Most people. I mean, there are still definitely some conspiracy theorists out there. They're like, well,
right.
Maybe, of course, this is what the league would say to cover up this grand conspiracy.
Yeah, okay, but like that, you can't listen to those people, right? I think it's totally fair that when you get new intel, you change your mind. I mean, that's that's part of why you need new intel. I mean, that's the whole point. But I understand, like, I'm not going to run away from this. Like, I understand reading those stats and seeing that it's 100% increase. You're going, what the hell? That's a lot. That is a lot. And in fewer minutes too. Like, I definitely understand that. As anyone who looks at those stats, you're just kind of going like you, like when you say a funny sound to a dog and it just kind of shifts its head, like what was that? Why is that a thing? But apparently, as turns out, Jaren Jackson Jr. just really loves playing at home.
Yeah, right. He gets that good barbecue beforehand. You know.
Yeah. I mean, kudos to Jaren. I mean,
yeah. Lord.
And by the way, that was the. One thing is, we could all have fun about this, and like we could all say, oh, okay, yeah, I got pulled into this, yada yada. I will say this because that bothered me. People were like calling out Jaren and saying, like, they were putting up memes where they basically said, like, Jaren Jackson, knowing full well he only had one block but got registered for seven, and then they had like rubbing their hands together memes and all that. Like, what the hell? Like, even if that these stats were being juiced up, like, and they weren't, but like, even if we say that they were, that's not him. Like, right. He's not going over to the stat guys and going, hey, well, hey,
maybe,
guys,
maybe he's add part, five maybe blocks. He's in. Maybe he's in on the computer. Oh, he's the part scorekeeper. Yeah, the scorekeeper bet had a huge futures bet on Jaren Jackson Jr., defensive player of the year.
Right.
He's doing these like in-game prop bets. Jaren Jackson Jr., three blocks in tonight's game. And he's like, all right. Got to figure out a way to manufacture these three blocks.
Right.
Which, by the way, like you, I did not know that the scorekeepers were not responsible for the individual stats, which makes total sense given the proliferation of gambling now, because you would very much want to avoid a situation where one individual is responsible for these stats when you can do these very specific prop bets, like...
Well, it's not one individual. So even back in the 90s, it was a team. It was like two or three people, but they could go together sometimes. Like the Nick Van Exel thing is the one that I always go back to, the 23 assist game. You know, there were like two or three people who just kind of decided, oh, yeah, let's see how far we can take this thing. I don't even remember what the true count was, but I believe it was like 11 or 12. They almost like practically doubled it.
Yeah.
Because assist is like such a vague thing. Mm-hmm. But I think for me it was I never remembered hearing or reading anything about the league basically saying, no, like go away. We're taking over the statistical production of all this. Like, okay. As soon as Fred Katz tweeted that, I was like, okay, cool. I am laying down all of my weapons. It's fine.
I mean, maybe this is just like my editor brain, the way it works now. But again, like if you're coming out with allegations like this,
right,
you better have the proof up front. I was not convinced after reading a random Reddit thread. Like, sure, statistically significant. However, there is a completely logical explanation that like maybe he is just better at home, or maybe it's such a small sample size, it'll even out over the course of the year. Like, are we looking at which opponents he played at home versus on the road? Are there certain matchups that like just lended itself to, he's going to block a ton of shots. Like this team make, you know, attempts a ton of shots in the paint, and it was going to be really easy for him to do that. I just was very amused yesterday when I sent on the Twitter, like, wow, there are a lot of people running with this. Good for you. You convinced a lot of people.
I mean, Josh Epperly, friend of the podcast.
Yeah.
I appreciate how invested he was in this. Like, he at one point was just, you know, he bought into this thing from the start, man. He was basically like, no, Jaren doesn't have a case for DPOY anymore. He was like, nope, done. Over. It's like probably Bam instead. Like, he was just, no, it can't be Jaren. Oh, I was like, Oh God! Like, wow! I mean, he's a friend. We love him.
Yeah, of course.
We love Josh. It was fun. I mean, and I think he took the piss on people a little bit. But I think he made a show of it. But like that was, I was sitting there laughing my ass off. Not at him, but he was just he just went in on this. I think he devoted like 50 tweets to this whole shenanigans. Like it's good. I love it when something happens that gets the interest level of the entire community just going. Except for when it's apparently another conspiracy, which is getting the Lakers a loss in Boston. That was less enjoyable. But no, yesterday was super fun. Oh my God. Some of the takes and some of the stuff. The only thing I had a problem with was people going at Jaren personally, because that's, I mean, come on. Come on.
Yeah. Like, well, I also don't like if there's any implication, because I know that like the DPOY odds, betting odds did change.
No, after really?
This came out. Yeah. Yeah.
You're kidding. So, it did. Oh, my God.
So, to be clear, this should not affect DPOY in any way because it's not true. And also, like, you can just, I mean, steals and blocks are not the only measure of someone's defensive impact. Jaren Jackson Jr. is just having a monster defensive season. Regardless, like, again, this is not true, but even if it were, like, you know, I think opponents are shooting. Like, I saw Keith Parrish of Fast Break Breakfast say yesterday, I think he said opponents are shooting 41% from the floor with Jaren Jackson Jr.
Seth Partnow also had like a long breakdown of it well. And that's the one thing I was like, even when I saw those stats as well, I was like, I don't care. That doesn't change anything with Jaren, because when you watch games with him, it's so obvious, like, just how destructive he is defensively. Like, that guy, when he's about to like come over from the weak side and contest shots, like, that's Giannis. Like, it really is. Just the extension, the athleticism, just how quick he gets to that point in that area, and how he'll extend that arm. Like, yeah, no, I mean, I don't care if he doesn't register another block for the rest of the year. I mean, he's still got a challenge. He's still going to position himself greatly. So, yeah, no, he's absolutely in that conversation still. Wow, I did not know the odds moved. Wow. No.
The odds MVP odds, big moves after Nuggets Sixers yesterday.
Wow. Okay. So this is like a GameStop kind of thing where we just manipulate the market.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. We're short selling.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you want to bet on Nikola Jokic, if you missed your early window to get in on him, this is the time to do it. Because I think he's now in the plus, not a like a full
You're
favorite.
You're kidding. I mean, wow.
He is still the front runner to win. Let me check. As of earlier today, he is, holy crap, it went down even more. Wow. He is plus 110.
Yeah.
Embiid is now plus 260.
And Luka is plus 700. That's great value for Luka.
Yeah. Assuming the ankle is okay.
Well, he said it wasn't going to be more than a couple of days.
Yeah.
I mean, if the if you bet Luka now, and we're not sitting here giving betting tips, I'm just saying, like, if you pick Luka now and the Mavs actually succeed in upgrading in the
trade deadline, that's true.
Oh, like, I could see that being a pretty decent win. Oh man, this field is insane. Like, I before this season, I went into like look at like the long term gambles just because I was kind of curious. I didn't feel confident about any of them, and I still don't. We're over halfway into the season, and there's not a single part of me that's like, oh yeah, this guy's gonna win this or this guy's gonna win that outside of rookie of the year. That's like,
I was about to say, you bet like Paolo has got
That's the one part, that's the one guy. Yeah. And like, if you're going MVP, I have no clue. I'm just like, no, I'm going to save my money. Because I am absolutely going to lose. Whoever I pick, I could very easily be wrong.
Pick Jokic in that case. Please do.
You are enjoying yourself a lot. That's fair. Okay.
Yeah. As a reminder, Joel Embiid, second in MVP odds, not an all-star starter, though.
No, that, and that is a legitimate gripe. One, you can flag that baby for the rest of the year, and I wouldn't mind. That is ridiculous.
I really plan on it. Thank you.
Yeah. 34 points per game, 10 rebounds, 4.5 assists, 1.7 blocks, 53% shooting from the field, almost 86 from the line on almost 12 attempts. Insane. And 36 from three, and being the anchor on the team's, what, third? Oh, it's dropped to seventh. Okay, seventh best defensive team. Still top 10 defense, and he's the anchor, scoring 34 points a game, not an all-star starter. God damn, that's just, that's ridiculous. It's
led the league with, what, 30.6 points per game last year? Now averaging 3.2 more points per game this year on better efficiency.
Much better.
Started the all-star game last year, not a starter this year. Got it.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Hope Kyrie doesn't have some free time to do some research before he heads to Utah. That's all I have to say.
Oh, God. Yeah. Okay. Yep. Mm-hmm. Someone should definitely ask Kyrie about that Reddit thread, by the way.
Oh, God.
I just want to hear what kind of words comes out of his mouth.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
I'm just curious.
Tucker. Just have him go on Tucker Carlson. He can explain it there.
Well, I don't know if he'll be able to actually reserve a seat, because it feels like Jonathan Isaac might
standing it. Well, now he has to play basketball again.
Oh, that's true.
Really, really cutting into his Fox News time.
Yep.
What a good place for us to wrap up. Yeah, good. Well, thank you all, as always, for listening in today. We will be back soon. The trade deadline is less than 2 weeks away at this point. At some point, trade slop is going to happen. We don't know when or where. And Miles Turner is now.
We actually just got one. We just got some while we were talking, from Matt Moore.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. Let me just see if I can find it again here, because I went away from it. I have it here. And he actually had a fair bit on the Bulls.
Oh, interesting. Oh, yeah. All right. Well, do you want to save it for next time?
No, let me just get this one. It's one bit, which I think is because, and the reason I want to read this is because I want to give a friend of the podcast, Ricky O'Donnell, a shout out, because Ricky was the first one to say, listen, Alex Caruso has more value than what we think he does. And then he pointed to how Robert Covington was traded for 2 first rounders. Mm-hmm. And he basically said, look, that is a similar thing that you can get for Caruso. And the other day, someone had that, the Bulls are looking forward to first rounders, and people were just cracking jokes all over because, Alex Caruso, 2 first. Mm-hmm. Here's what Matt Moore says from the Action Network. He says, the hardest guard on the market to get, Chicago's Alex Caruso, who nearly a dozen teams have serious interest in. He's in his prime, 28, cheap, $8 million, and open to various roles, but Chicago knows the market for him. Some teams have backed away, believing they won't be able to win a bidding war for Caruso.
Interesting.
So good on Ricky. Ricky nailed that one, and that was 2 months ago, I want to say. Ricky knocked that out of the park. Good on you, Ricky. That was tremendous foresight.
All right. Well, we'll have more trade slop, hopefully, at some point to discuss next week. We'll have to break down this Miles Turner extension as well. Hopefully.
Yes. Not 2 years, 60 on top of his current deal. Oh, my God. People are still not getting that.
Yeah. No, it's a really interesting structure and a worth delving into, but there still seems to be some confusion over whether he's even eligible to be traded right now. So hopefully we'll get that piece of news, because that is actually a big factor in.
It's pretty relevant. Yes.
Yeah. So if we know that by the next time we record, we'll go into that as well. But in the meantime, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio to give us a follow as well. You also find us on iTunes, wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. Are being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Tapori, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Mort, I realized I said there might be a next time, but if the Eagles lose today, there won't be a next time for me. So pray for the Eagles, and we'll talk later this week.
Sure. I mean, look, the Bears have already locked up the number one pick, so I can root for you guys this year. That's fine. Then I have a team in the playoffs I can root for on your behalf.
And the Eagles traded for Robert Quinn, one of the Bears' pass rushers. So there is a former Bear on the Eagles that could win
the Super Bowl. Yeah. See, there we go. That makes it all the worthwhile. Yes.
Good. All right. Later, man.
Later.